I guess I could run the file not through PowerPoint. Okay, good morning. Let's go ahead and get started. Okay. Can you hear in the back? It doesn't seem like the mic is working today. Is that better?
Worse?
How's that? It doesn't seem like it's here? Is that okay in the back?
For a second.
Yeah, the problem is it hasn't. I'll try that. Okay. If everybody could get out a piece of paper for the quiz, that would be great. Be sure and put your name on it. So last time we talked about how vaccines work. They stimulate our immune system without causing disease. And we talked about four ways by which vaccines are made. We talked about non-infectious vaccines. We talked about live attenuated bacterial or viral vaccines. We talked about carrier vaccines. And we talked a little bit about DNA vaccines. And then we talked about the preclinical and the human clinical trial process and the post-licensure surveillance associated with vaccine testing. And we touched a bit on the impact of vaccines. So today, what I'd like to do is continue with that discussion and talk about some of the issues associated with making a vaccine for HIV. First thing we're going to do is a quick pop quiz. So the quiz has two questions. In the article, The Vaccine, researchers based a new HIV vaccine on findings from a group of workers in Nairobi. What was the profession of these workers? Question number one, worth 1 point. And question number two, worth 1 point, is which person profiled in the article did you find most interesting? So please take a minute and then just pass them that way, and we'll pick them up. If you can describe them, that's good enough. Yeah. Okay, if you could go ahead and just pass the quizzes that way, then we'll pick them up. Be sure you have your name on it, please. Okay, so I'd like to follow up then on homework 7. On homework number 7, What did you find when you searched information about vaccine safety and vaccine dangers? Can you characterize the kind of information that you found and the quality of the information? So a lot of anecdotal information about potential side effects. Another comment? Yeah, I don't know if everybody could hear the comment. I think it's an excellent comment. When you Google vaccine and dangers, are there credible sources of information sort of providing good quality information about what misconceptions are regarding the dangers associated with vaccination? Any other comments? So as a consumer, how do you judge the quality of that health information? Because you can make information that's not as high quality look very professional. Right, if that terminology isn't understandable.
It also seemed that a lot of the stories about danger were actually set up as stories.
Right.
In terms of psychology, you're actually more likely to stick with the average person in their mind rather than the
symptoms. So one of the things that we're going to do today is we're going to take a look at a video that was produced by the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia as a way to provide good quality health information to counteract some of the inaccurate information that you can find when you do something like Google vaccine danger. Okay, so I'm gonna play it in a different way here. This is about a 25-minute video. It's really well done, so we're gonna take the time to watch it all.
From the first day of life, our children depend on us to feed and clothe, nurture and protect them. And we enjoy them with this advice we provide. We need to consider parents and early choices about the benefits and risks of vaccines. Questions that deserve equal serious answers.
Mary Ann, for anyone born soon after a friend of mine mentioned that she had concerns about safety and efficacy of vaccination. So,
2 months, 4 months, 6 months, and again at 12 to 15 months of age, so the children can get the antibodies that they need to protect them against this serious and occasionally fatal infection.
Recently, we saw a television news report about something that really stuck in my mind, which was the link between the MMR vaccine and autism. Why wouldn't it just be safer to separate the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine instead of giving it to a child all at once?
This is a very emotional issue, and it springs from a report. proven.
That was important to me.
Good science really rests on two foundations. One is the science being published in a good, reputable journal, meaning that the data or information has been reviewed by peers. And secondly, I think most importantly, is that the data be reproducible.
When I finally got accurate information, I discovered that the risk of taking the vaccine is very, 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 very small in comparison to the risk of getting the disease and the dangers associated with these specific diseases that are out there. I never dreamed that my child would get one of the diseases that was on the vaccine list.
As a doctor, I had the misfortune of having to watch children suffer severe and occasionally fatal consequences of infections. And I can tell you that as a parent, I would no more send my children into a world without vaccines than I would put them in a car without a seatbelt or a boat without a life jacket. I will do whatever I can to put them in the safest position possible, and vaccines offer that safety.
I want to come back actually to your comment about one of the things that you don't find about good information about vaccines is stories. And I think this video is a really nice example of health information that is more appropriate for consumers, that provides accurate information both about the risks and the dangers associated with vaccines. Are there any other comments about this before we move on, about what you found on the website? Okay, so what I want to do then is we're going to move to talking about making a vaccine for HIV, and we're going to do an activity toward the end of class, so I'm actually going to skip through some of the slides that review what you read in the article. We've talked a lot about the clinical course of HIV and AIDS. This is just review, so I'm going to skip through it and talk a little bit about the history of attempts to try and make vaccines for HIV and AIDS. One of the things that the article talked about was a prediction that was made by Margaret Heckler in 1984. She was the Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare. And shortly after Robert Gallo discovered the virus that causes HIV, she made a prediction that within 2 years we would have a vaccine for HIV. And even at the time that she made that prediction, it was sort of viewed with ridicule in the scientific community. People really felt that was far beyond the capability, given our understanding of the disease. And actually, just 13 years later, President Clinton declared that an HIV vaccine would be available within a decade's time. And clearly, that prediction will not come to pass. In 2003, President Bush asked for $15 billion to combat the spread of HIV in Africa and in the Caribbean. Today, however, we don't have an effective vaccine. And so what we're going to talk about is some of the scientific challenges as well as some of the ethical challenges associated with testing candidate vaccines. So what are some of the challenges? The first challenge is that there are many forms of HIV. And there are two main forms, each of which has many subtypes, and each subtype may require a different vaccine. The second challenge is that there are several routes of transmission. We know that sexual contact, as well as contact with contaminated blood, can result in transmission, and so we have to provide immunity both for mucous membrane transmission and blood-borne transmission. So in order to provide protection, since an infection can be caused by an encounter with free virus or by transmission of cells infected with the virus, we have to stimulate both antibody and cell-mediated immunity in our vaccine. The other challenge associated with developing a vaccine for HIV is that HIV attacks the cells of the immune system itself. And we're trying to use our vaccine to manipulate the cells of the immune system. And so the target that we're going after is trying to attack those CD4 positive lymphocytes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
think the problem is that usage rates are not 100%, and so that even if you encourage condom usage and you provide education about the roots of transmission of the disease, it won't eliminate the disease. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't know if there are good studies about the protective ability when condoms are properly used. Maybe Yvette, do you have good data? I know it's in excess of 99.8%. The question was, is there any possibility that the virus can pass through a condom? Okay, so what we're going to take a look at is design goals for an HIV vaccine. And so our two design goals are we want to stimulate antibody-mediated immunity, and we want to stimulate cell-mediated immunity. And in order for that to happen, to stimulate our antibody-mediated immunity, that's the easier thing to do. The cells of our immune system just has to see the virus or viral debris. But remember, to stimulate the cell-mediated immunity, the virus has to get inside the cell, and portions of the viral protein have to get loaded on to the MHC receptors in the antigen-presenting cells. So we talk about four strategies for HIV, for any vaccine development. Remember, our strategies were a live attenuated viral vaccine. The advantage of live attenuated vaccines is they stimulate both cell and antibody-mediated immunity. We talked about non-infectious vaccines. So we kill the virus, or we use a subunit of the virus. The problem with that is it's only going to stimulate our antibody-mediated immunity. A carrier vaccine provides an alternative that will stimulate both cell and antibody-mediated immunity, and DNA vaccines can do that as well. So if we know that we need to stimulate both cell and antibody-mediated immunity, non-infectious vaccine isn't really a good criteria, isn't really a good candidate, because it's only going to stimulate antibody-mediated immunity. What about live attenuated vaccines? They will stimulate both cell and antibody-mediated immunity. So that is a good candidate. The problem is that this is a very dangerous strategy with HIV. And the reason is that this is a virus that mutates constantly. So even if you have a strain of the virus that's attenuated so that it doesn't produce disease in people, now if you use that to immunize, there's a high likelihood that it can mutate to acquire the ability to produce disease. And in fact, there have been a number of experiments in monkeys where they were vaccinated with a live attenuated viral vaccine, and in all of those trials, the vaccinated animals developed AIDS and died. Okay. So although this is a strategy that's very likely to stimulate the kinds of immunity that we want to stimulate, it's really too dangerous of a strategy to use. Okay, what about an inactivated viral vaccine? Well, if we take the whole virus, there is always the chance that we won't inactivate all of the virus. And when this has been done in animals, it's been shown that it only stimulates antibody-mediated immunity. Again, not good enough for what we want to do. Another approach that you read about in the article, the VaxGen vaccine, uses a viral subunit and uses some of the envelope proteins. Again, it's only going to stimulate the antibody-mediated immunity. There have been some early human trials as well as some larger clinical trials. And what they have shown is that patients who've received that vaccine only produce the antibody-mediated immunity, not the cell-mediated immunity. Using a carrier vaccine to deliver a subunit of the virus can produce both antibody and cell-mediated immunity. In this case, we're going to need a carrier that doesn't produce disease, even in immunocompromised individuals. And if we need a booster, remember every time we'll have to switch our carrier. And so the other strategy that you heard about in the article was using a DNA vaccine followed by a carrier vaccine. Okay? And the canary pox carrier is the carrier that has been used in those trials. And there, the early results show that 70% of people develop antibody-mediated immunity, and 30% are developing the cell-mediated immunity. And so the second strategy that the article talked about was using the DNA vaccine. So in the Nairobi prostitutes who had developed the ability to have the killer T cells that would protect them against infection, they identified viral proteins which were present on the MHC receptors of their T cells. They identified the DNA that coded for those proteins, and they used that DNA to develop their vaccine to elicit the immune response against that particular protein. And they were able to show that that did generate a cell-mediated immune response. One of the concerns about this is whether the few proteins that they're using will protect against the many different strains of HIV. Okay? So that brings us to now consider what are the HIV vaccines that are currently in clinical trials. This is from the website of the IAVI, the International AIDS Vaccine Institute. And this is a summary table of all of the HIV vaccines that are currently in clinical trials throughout the world. And you can take a look at this if you go to their website. And I want you to notice a couple of things when we get to their website. Okay, take a look at who wrote this article, Seth Berkley. He was in the article that we read. This is an article about the Uganda Virus Research Institute. It was described in the Spectre article. If we go here, it talks about Pontiano Kalibu, another person who was interviewed in the article that you read. They're just beginning a phase two trial of a new vaccine associated with his institute. So there's a lot of very, very good information about what vaccines are in clinical trials. And if you want to learn more about the vaccines that were described in the trial, if you go to this part of the IAVI website, for example, you can take a look at vaccines that are manufactured by VaxGen. And you can go and you can learn more about what's going on with the clinical trials. So it talks about uses the GP120, that envelope protein, on the surface of the virus. And here are the various trials that have been carried out or are ongoing. And so if you're interested in learning more, the article that you read was published in 2003, and you can get an update on where things are here. Okay, so the article outlines some of the dangers associated with going forward with a large clinical trial too soon. And one of the dangers is that most researchers feel that the first vaccine that goes into large trials, the best candidates right now, won't be more than 40 to 50% effective. And there's a danger that if people believe they're protected because they've been vaccinated, that they will engage in riskier behaviors. And so because of that, actually going into trials with a vaccine that is not as effective will actually increase incidence rates of HIV. The vaccine could cause maybe more harm than it prevents. The second challenge is that if you had a vaccine that had been shown in phase three clinical trials to be 40 to 50% effective, now if you had a second candidate vaccine that looked like it might be more effective, it would be unethical to carry out any future trials comparing a new vaccine to a placebo. And so you would increase substantially the cost of carrying out any future clinical trials. So what I want to do with the time that we have left in class is to discuss in some more detail the article.
article overviewed a lot of health data from Uganda. I'm not going to go through it in detail, but it talked about two vaccines. It talked about the Vaxgen vaccine, which is only expected to stimulate antibody-mediated immunity and is only expected to work maybe 30 to 40% of the time. And it talked about the Nairobi prostitute vaccine that was developed by the researchers at Oxford. It's a nice clip. It's from this wonderful RX for Survival series that was on PBS. I think it was first shown in January. But this is two short clips about the history of the design of this vaccine. It takes about 10 minutes to play, so we won't have time to do it today. But if you have time, it's really very good information. So the vaccine strategy for the second vaccine was the naked DNA vaccine, which codes for those viral proteins that are loaded on the surface of the T cells in those prostitutes, and then followed up with a carrier-based vaccine that uses a carrier called the vaccine Ankara to carry that same DNA. And the early evidence with the phase one clinical trials of this vaccine was that the combination of the naked DNA vaccine plus the carrier vaccine stimulated a stronger immune response than any vaccine on its own. The article talked about a village in Uganda called Masaka, and there were a number of characters in the article. Don Francis, the president of Vaxgen, Andrew McMichael, the developer of the vaccine, Marcia Angel, the former editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, and Peter Lurie, he's with a watch group, basically a public citizens health group, Pontiana Kalibo from the Ugandan Viral Research Institute, Seth Berkley from IAVI, Larry Conroy at the National Institutes of Health. There's a Ugandan medical student who is interviewed in the article, and a chief of bioethics at NIH. And so, I forgot about Edward Mabidi from the Ugandan Cancer. So what I would like to do with the rest of class today is to really think about, if you were living in Masaka in Uganda and you were faced with the decision, should your community participate in a clinical trial of either the Vaxgen vaccine or the Nairobi prostitute vaccine, what decision would you make? And so what we're going to do is we're going to invite people to come down and participate in a debate and to play the role of some of the people that were profiled in this article. And so I need somebody who's interested in portraying Ezekiel Emanuel, who's the chief of bioethics at the NIH. Is that a volunteer? He says, if the rules of clinical trials require participants to receive the best care on earth, there would be no clinical trials. Ezekiel, come on. This is fun. We have to get participants. Come on down. Okay, now this is my personal favorite person in the article. Marcia Angel. We need somebody who's really outgoing to be Marcia. Because Marcia says what is morally right in America is morally right in Africa too. Marcia, come on down. Okay, here you are, Ezekiel. Tape this on your front so people know you are the tape's right there. Okay, Marcia, here we go. Now I need Peter Lurie. Peter is Marcia's buddy. Peter says you are not permitted to use subjects to collect data just because it's useful to you. Peter's fun too. Do I have to offer extra credit? I guess I do. We'll give you 1 point of extra credit on exam number one if you will come down and be Peter. We'll give 1 point to everybody who participates. Okay, Peter, there you go. Andrew McMichael, he's the developer of the vaccine. He rarely discusses his vaccine work without saying it all might come to nothing. Okay, Pontiano Kalibu. This is another good guy. He says, if I could distribute antiretroviral drugs, I would be thrilled, but I don't see how and I don't see when, and the debate is a bit patronizing. Pontiano, come on down. Okay, now we have Edward Mabide. He has a great quote, too. If we need to go to work and we can't afford a Mercedes-Benz, should we refuse to ride a motorcycle? Okay, Edward. Okay, you only have three more chances to get an extra point. Seth Berkeley. Seth is good. You have to ask yourself what on earth the people on this planet are doing. Seth, come on. Okay, two more chances. Don Francis. He would be pleased if his vaccine worked a third of the time. Okay? All right, you're Don. There you go. Oh, we have two more chances to earn a point. Don, you need your sign. There you go. Okay, we have the Ugandan medical student. Who wants to go to medical school? We do not get the care you get. We never will. Okay, come on down. Okay, your last chance, Larry Corey. Larry says, to create a vaccine that works 40% of the time, costs $1,000, and requires you go to the lab to get a blood test every 6 weeks is crap. Okay, Larry. You know, she's at Harvard. I don't know, you know, where she was born. You could do her with an accent if you want. Okay, Larry, here you are. Okay, so I'm going to get things started, and we're going to have Andrew McMichael. You're going to tell us about your vaccine. And I'm going to, hang on just one second, I'm going to let you guys pass the mic around. And now, if you in the audience, if you have questions for these people, you want to ask the question, please ask your question.
Okay, so my vaccine that I'm working on is the first vaccine to target specific viral subtype that's the most prevalent in East Africa right now. And it might require frequent booster shots. And the main thing to keep in mind is you don't know where it's going. It might not end up having any results. Yeah. I don't know. I think there would definitely have to be some kind of international effort, maybe UNAIDS or something like that can organize some kind of international effort.
Just because these people are poor doesn't mean that we can just test things on them. If we are to test vaccines on people in Africa, then we have to make sure that they have the same medications available to them that people in America do. They're still human beings. They still deserve equal treatment in medicine. Just because they live in an underdeveloped country does not mean that they should be getting drugs or should not be, does not mean that the drugs that are available to people in developed countries should not be available to them also. The cost is going to be pretty high. but I don't think that if we start to allow things to already start to deteriorate, there's no saying what's going to happen in the future. There's no saying how far researchers will take this.
Ezekiel would argue there would be no future if everyone got the first scare on Earth. So he would. I'm assuming that he would argue there would be no progress because he couldn't. You wouldn't move forward. You would just be continuously defying everyone the same sentences. But like, I mean, are they? I had a really hard time with Marcia just because, and especially when at the end of the article, like the doctor at the clinic just talked about how like. You know, he saw in his own future of his children that they were gonna have to face this. And how can he not see the merit of just trying to make she just kind of sounded like you would just sit there and do nothing in the sense that you would just keep like promoting the same treatment to everybody, but they don't see that as progress and they're willing to make any kind of progress.
I think Pontiano would argue that although, you know, like he's made his realization that these drugs aren't available to his people, and, you know, he encounters like his friends that are diagnosed with AIDS, and he can't tell them anything else besides, you know, you can't afford these drugs. So the only, I mean, is death, you know? So he's kind of would be, anything would help. And if, you know, and as far as, like, the idea of fairness, you know, whatever he can provide to his people is, you know, whatever they can afford as far as treatment is fair, and that it's not really an issue of individual rights, it's a public health emergency.